section or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
At 7 o'clock, you're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. Up next, Access Hour.
Welcome to the Access Hour, where each week WORT offers you the opportunity to fly your program over the radio. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. We'd like this show to be as unpredictable as possible, so we need your creative ideas. It's a fair trade. You give us what you've got, and we give you the facilities and any help you need to get your program airborne. So let your mind wander and wonder. And when the inspiration for some pretty good radio glows with a clear, bright light, get in touch. Just go to WORTFM.org and look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Programs are scheduled first come, first served. And now it's time to begin another foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule, the Access Hour.
Hello, I'm Steph Stringer, your co-host for the Access Hour.
And I'm Kate Kerper. Community Living Alliance is a not-for-profit organization based in Dane County, and we serve the several contiguous counties as well. We provide services to people in their homes and have been doing so for over 30 years. I think that our tagline, bringing health, independence, and dignity home, says a lot about who we are. Our roots are firmly based in the independent living philosophy, which means that people that we serve tell us what they need. They have the right to choose the services they need and how they want them to be delivered. The independent living movement was founded over 50 years ago by a gentleman named Ed Roberts and others in Berkeley, California. This was the first civil rights movement for people with disabilities. While Rosa Parks valiantly fought to maintain her seat on the city bus, people in the independent living movement fought for public transportation to be built accessibly so that people in wheelchairs could get on the city bus for the first time. They also fought for people to be able to live in their homes instead of institutions or nursing homes, and fought for full inclusion and participation in society, be it school, work, or play. The independent living movement was actively involved in designing the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, which became the law of the land on July 26, 1990. We are still advocating and educating, but some barriers have been eliminated, and both physically and in society. We will be talking more about our agency tonight, but if you have interest, would like to hear more about Community Living Alliance, please check out our website at www.clanet.org.
And I'm Steph Stringer. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's quite a privilege to be able to host the Access Hour this time. It is a great venue, I know, for the community. And part of that would be Community Living Alliance, an organization that both Kate and I work for, but it's a nonprofit that is one that pulls on our heartstrings And my role there as the community partnership manager is basically to be a liaison between other agencies and in our agency, CLA, you'll hear us reference. And we try really hard to make sure that we're reaching out to other agencies and providing services to them to make sure that we are working in partnership, not working against one another, because, we are all out there trying to make the lives of individuals having disabilities, making their lives better. Kate?
Yeah, thanks, Steph. So I have been at Community Living Alliance now for over 24 years, and I am the intake coordinator with Community Living Alliance, which means I'm the person that people speak with when they first seek out services. That could be individuals seeking services, family members of individuals who need our services, or I too often have involvement with agencies and have the opportunity to work collegially with folks in the community. It's truly a pleasure to talk with people. I enjoy that. I'm always happy to try to help people find the services and the things that they need, whether it's through our agency. And I also can do some information and referral for folks. I truly do enjoy talking with people, and it's something I've been doing for a long time. So always people can feel free to give me a call. I think it's about time that we're going to move into the first of several interviews that we have set up for tonight. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Terry Deist, who is one of our board members and is married to Bob Deist, who was the director of our personal care program at Community Living Alliance from the time it came into being, since its inception. So I will looking forward to letting you hear what Terry had to say.
I have the pleasure of chatting with Terry Deist, one of CLA's board members and a woman whose family connection with CLA goes back to the beginning of the organization.
I can't believe that it has been that long, but it really has when I think about it.
Yes.
It was a long time ago. Bob started his career at Access to Independence, and along with others, he saw that there was a big need. And so he played a really big part in creating the Community Living Alliance and was its first director of personal care programs. He knew firsthand the challenges that were encountered by people with disabilities, especially if they wanted to continue to live independently in their communities. When he was injured in 1966, he was only 14, and he ended up in a hospital that was quite a distance from his home. His parents wanted to, once he was stabilized, they wanted to get him moved closer to a hospital that would be more convenient. They were both still working, and they went to the hospital every night after work, and they found a hospital that said they would take him. And when they got there, obviously the ambulance dropped him off. The hospital didn't know what to do with him, and they were going to put him in an iron lung. And when his parents said, no, I don't think so, he's not in one now, that seems like the wrong direction to go, they stuck him in a morgue. And they were in the morgue for almost 24 hours before they found another hospital that would take him. And he didn't really get any care during those 24 hours. At some point, he got moved to another hospital. And at some point, the doctors told his parents that there weren't any people like him, but that they had this wonderful care facility that they would move him to, and he would get the care he needed. He was in that facility for about 3 months, and he did not receive great care. He was in a circle bed, which most people probably don't know what that is, so I'll give you a little description. It kind of looks like a Ferris wheel, and the bed is in the middle, and they had frames that they attached to both sides, and they could just turn it to flip him over to change his position. And they would forget to attach the straps, and he'd fall face first on the floor. his parents didn't know what to do. They were distraught. He wasn't doing well there. And thankfully, his dad's union stepped in, and he helped them get him transferred to another hospital. When he left that wonderful facility, he had 32 bed sores, and he was suffering from malnutrition. You know, they would say, hey, you get one pat of butter. Do you want it on your bread or your potatoes? And when he got to this new hospital, they were like, anything you want to eat, you tell us, we'll get it. If we have to leave the hospital, we will get it. You want a milkshake, you want a pizza, a burger, whatever. It's yours. You would let us know, because, you know, bed sores kind of suck the life out of you. So he had his first rehab at that hospital. And this is also, he was injured the summer before his freshman year of high school, when he started high school. But he had to really fight for it. Since he was hospitalized in one community, but his home was in another community, first the school districts battled about whose job it was to educate him. In reality, none of them thought he needed an education. They said, hey, you're never going to do anything. Common theme he heard was, hey, you're not going to do anything. You're never going to have a job. You're never going to get married. You're never going to have kids. So why do you need a job? Why do you need to go to high school? Well, he persisted, and his local school district ended up being the school district that educated him, and he was finally allowed to go into the school the last half of his senior year for half days. But they really fought that. They didn't think he needed to be there. You know, it was just going to be a disruption, and there was no benefits to him. Another thing about Bob, he was an early advocate, and he was a champion for like ADA before ADA even existed. He worked in his local town trying to get curb cuts and ramps installed at businesses, and people would say, well, why do you need that? Because you never see people with disabilities out anywhere. You don't see people in chairs. And he said, well, because we can't get anywhere. If you let us get places, we would. At some point, he decided, hey, he needed a college education if he had any hope of supporting himself and living independently. He figured he couldn't live with his mom and dad forever. They couldn't take care of him. So he found his way to UW-Whitewater, and he graduated with a degree in social work in 1982. We also got married that year, and he started his job at Access 2 weeks later after the wedding. That's a lot to happen in 1 year for someone who was told, hey, you're never really going to do anything, so why do you need to go to school? That helped form Bob's vision for CLA. He wanted to help create an organization where people with disabilities could not only get the care they need, but they could have an active role in managing that care. That it's not things being done to you. You were part of the ongoing support and the discussion. Actually, for him, taking that first job at Access was one of the scariest things for him. He was on Medicaid, and he got money to help pay for attending care. And once he started working, he earned too much money, and he didn't qualify for any of those things anymore, but he still needed that care. I mean, it was just kind of part of my everyday life once we got married, or even before we got married, you know. Hey, I provided that care. I was his primary caregiver for most of his life.
I think, again, it just epitomizes what the independent living movement is all about.
Yes.
So what prompted you to join CLA's board of directors?
Well, Bob passed away in January of 2016, and I was really kind of lost because, you know, as people pointed out to me at some point, hey, you're really doing 3 full-time jobs. You're his primary caregiver, and you're working full-time, and you're case managing and doing all these things. And so I had all this time, and I didn't know what to do with myself, and I wanted to be involved with people with disabilities. So I started volunteering at the Veterans Hospital and at Geo's Garden. I wanted people to know that it's okay to have a disability. You know, your world's not going to end because your kid has a disability or because you've acquired a disability. Your life, you can still have a full life. In October, on his birthday, I was just feeling a need to really connect with people who knew him well, and found myself at CLA chatting with Todd and Joe Trusley, and they told me about a board position, and I've been on the board since 2017.
And what would you say keeps you invested in the work that CLA does?
Well, the work is so important. I really feel like I'm helping carry on Bob's legacy by doing it. But the caregivers provide such a service. It's so important that people don't realize how hard a job that is and how important it is. I really feel like it's something that I need to be involved in.
Finally, Terry, are there any board initiatives you think our listeners would be interested in hearing about?
Absolutely. The biggest initiative right now is our annual fundraiser. It's going to be held at the Brink Lounge on Thursday, June 16th, and we're calling it Gather to Give. And all the funds that we raise will go into CLA's Caregiver Fund, which is used to directly support our caregivers when life happens. You know, everyone has unexpected expenses, and we use these funds to help our amazing caregivers when life happens to them. And this can be anything from car repairs, food and housing insecurity, to bereavement support. We're committed to helping the caregivers who work with our clients so they can stay in their homes. We wouldn't be in business without them, and we're committed to ensuring their success and recognizing their efforts.
That is so true. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us. Throughout the evening, you will hear us reference the Bob Deist Annual Caring for the Caregiver Award. Our workers who have received this award are very lucky to have it, and it was truly a privilege for me personally to work with Bob. So thanks again, Terry. Wonderful chatting with you.
Thanks, Kate. Nice chatting with you, too.
I so enjoyed doing this interview with Terry. And I don't know if I mentioned it before, but I have known Terry and Bob for almost 40 years, which makes me feel really old. I also worked with Bob at Community Living Alliance and Access to Independence for about 10 years. So this is just a great legacy, and I just so appreciated the passion that Terry brought to this interview and to the work that she does.
It's so good to have her, you know, willing to share that story. She seemed pretty uninhibited. Sounds yep. like she's told that story many, many times, no?
mm-hmm. Yeah. And knows it well, and it's just, and yet it doesn't get old. It's great.
Yeah. Can I ask you a couple questions, Kate?
Sure.
What brought you to Community Living Alliance?
Well, I worked for Access to Independence for almost 9 years prior to applying for the intake coordinator position mm-hmm. at Community Living Alliance. And I, too, have just a very strong passion. I'm a person with a disability myself. I'm totally blind, and I have a strong passion for making the lives of people with disabilities better and for full inclusion and being able to just be treated with respect, independence, and dignity. I was doing just a number of different things at Access to Independence, which I don't think I mentioned, but that was our local independent living center, and they do excellent work as well. But I wanted to be able to be more directly involved with clients and helping people just get the services they needed. I felt that would be a better use of my skill set. So mm-hmm. I think that's what drew me. But I love the fact that CLA is, you know, committed to people having choices about where they live, work, and play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've actually only started working at Community Living Alliance myself just this year, actually. And, you know, what I will say is that the people who I work with are just amazing.
Aren't they?
Yes. And I find that they have such a down-to-earth approach to their peers, as well as, you know, the type of care that they offer to other people. And, and such a loving embrace of the caregivers. The building itself is decorated from the inside out, shooting out, that says, you know, we love our caregivers and definitely understand how essential they are to the fact that, you know, we're providing a service. We can't do it without their investment. So
that's right. They are a big part of what we do.
Mm-hmm. And so I was able to talk to yet another board member, a person who has a disability and has been welcomed into the fold as well, you know, and onto the board to help make decisions. His name is Mike Jones, and take a listen to our conversation. Thank you, Mike, for taking the time to talk with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome to my home. I'm glad you're here.
So, let's see. So, you're a board member for Community Living Alliance.
That's correct. I'm on my second term. Like I said, I've been with Community Living Alliance now for 22 years.
Yes, okay. So, you haven't been on the board for 22 years.
No. I've only been with the board for a couple of years.
So, what type of services were you seeking?
I am in a wheelchair and cannot get out independently. So I need help doing a lot of things.
Okay.
They help me with my daily dressing and toileting and showering, as well as housekeeping and cooking my meals. Okay. So I'm pretty extensive.
How does that make you feel when you have a personal care worker or caregiver coming into your home to help you with
this? They are very, very friendly. And that's one of the good things about CLA. Our Community Living Alliance is so extraordinary. Mm-hmm. They care both about the worker and the client.
So, Mike, you need those types of cares provided to help you.
Yes.
But I see that you are on your own here. So you do live, you don't have a 24/7 support with caregivers.
No, I don't. Okay. And I at this time, I'm 51 years old, and at this time I don't need around the clock care. If there was someone here 24/7, we'd drive you to the crazy.
Yes, I understand that. You said it really well, the tighter labor market, meaning there's not as many people looking for work in this field. And so hiring good attendants or good personal care workers, or also as we call caregivers, is not as easy these days, yeah.
Well, you can't take and this is from the client side, you can't take anyone for granted because everyone is working very hard and it's still very tight. And for the amount of work they do and what they do, they don't make enough money.
Yeah.
I can't get out of bed by myself, so if there was no worker, I would wind up peeing the bed and dying within 3 days because I couldn't get out of bed myself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm lucky in that I do have family here in town, so if worse comes to worse, I personally would not die. But others are not so lucky. Yeah. Unlike other jobs where you don't see people and you're in that cubicle and you don't see yourself doing any good, this job, you know you're doing good because this person is not in bed right now because you've got them up.
Yeah.
You know they've done something. You've done something to help another human being. And that means a lot to certain people. And those are the people we want in CLA.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for coming, Armin. Thank you for this opportunity.
And so that was Mike Jones, again, a member of Community Living Alliance's board, has been receiving services from CLA for 22 years. I spoke with him a lot longer than the interview, but he is someone who really embodies an advocate for, you know, people with disabilities and making sure that their lives are made better, because of course he knows the struggles, and it was really great talking with him as well.
Yeah. I think that's always such a strong thing when people can talk about their own experience and explain it, because they understand it really better than any of us do. So I love that we had the opportunity for you to do that, Stephanie.
Yeah. And, you know, I worked with another agency prior to coming to CLA, and part of my role was to provide care to others. And honestly, I've been in the, you know, caregiving field for almost 30 years, and now I feel old. But, you know, I remember just sort of stumbling into working with people, and I probably should have been deterred by my very, very, very first experience, just because I was a young person and working with adults and some of the types of care that you have to provide, which was completely, you know, a new. And mm-hmm. in my head, I know what I was thinking. It was like, wow, okay. But it was just the people who I was supporting and their vibrant personalities. And, you know, growing up, actually, I grew up in, you know, the 80s, once again. I grew up in the 80s, and quite frankly, you know, my community did not put anyone with a disability out there. And, you know, if there were people with disabilities, I sure didn't know it, let's just say. So, yeah.
You know, I think that's true. And I think part of it was because many times things were not accessible mm-hmm. to people with disabilities. I think of the movie Field of Dreams, where they say, if you build it, they will come. Mm. And I think we were still kind of coming to a place in the 70s and 80s where curb cuts were still being built and things were being made more accessible. Mm-hmm. But very often you didn't see people with disabilities. And so I think that that's been more something that's been happening more frequently. And also, I was thinking as you were talking that you probably learned so much from the people you were working for, even if it felt intimidating initially. Mm. While I'm sure you taught them things, it was just a mutual situation where you were learning from them and learning about the struggles and the good things that happened with them, and mm-hmm. that had to help
yeah.
keep wanting to do this work.
Yeah, it did. In fact, I learned about Richard Simmons and his exercise tapes and got me moving, let me just say, with working with Tommy. He was someone that I would really look forward to seeing. And and he was the first person, in fact, who, quite frankly, I don't think it was the right way to be introduced to somebody, but it happened, and it was helping him in the shower, a grown man, as a 21-year-old girl. Like, whoa, what's going on?
New and different experience.
Yeah, exactly.
But you didn't run away from it, and that's the positive.
I didn't, because the rest of the day was just so much more than I ever knew, honestly.
Exactly.
And you know, I dropped my, you know, my fears and inhibitions that just in the course of an 8-hour shift.
There you go.
Yeah. I think the thing about it is, and you know, is that caregiving, being a caregiver, you know, there's so much experiences that just touch your soul that causes us to really, well, feel fulfilled. I've had a job here and there in various fields that just didn't feel fulfilling. It wasn't fulfilling. I was making maybe the same amount of money, maybe a little more money. And, you know, I've come back to this field over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a heart commitment, I think.
Yeah, well, but it's worth it, right?
So. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people don't really realize how much they would and do identify with the caregiving role. Can you just elaborate on, you know, it's not just being a paid worker to go in and give someone baths and feed, et cetera. I think if we think about it, there are so many ways that so many different ways that people are caregivers.
Yeah, I think of my own life again as a person with a disability and how often friends have assisted me to go someplace because I don't drive, or, you know, have taken me with them on a road trip someplace, and just how valuable that has been in my life, or helping me through, say, a lunch line, or, you know, take me to a beauty shop appointment. So many different, for me, that's all about caregiving. It, hopefully it's friendship for them too, mm-hmm. but it is definitely part of caregiving. Mm-hmm. And we see it with friends and family. Family are one of our most valuable resources, I think, mm-hmm. as far as doing these kinds of cares. I mean, you know, so many people over the years, parents and siblings and other family members have fought so hard for the rights of people in their lives with disabilities or older adults to get what they need. But not only have they fought, they have gotten up at night when someone's been sick and helped them mm-hmm. With cleaning up after throwing up or having an accident of some sort. And those things just count for so much. As I said before, that stuff comes from the heart. And there's nothing that's more precious or special than that, I think.
Yeah.
And it's all about, though, still making the person feel that they are, with accommodation, they can do whatever they want to do, and providing that accommodation to allow them to do it. And I just, to me, that is so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, so I think that we, you know, another way to identify with this topic, for those of you listening in, is, you know, think about not just care, you know, giving care to your kids, but your aging parents. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. We will all either at some point give care to someone else or be cared for. Because that's part of the aging process. Obviously, there's exceptions to that statement, but, you know,
very often that is the truth. And yeah. We all probably know people.
We do.
Who are currently receiving that care or have received it mm-hmm. and are so grateful for the folks that stepped up to the plate to do that care.
Yeah. Well, that's a great segue into our next interview. I talked with Cheryl Nesbitt. She, too, works for Community Living Alliance. She's a person who holds a position of scheduling persons, you know, staff. We call them personal care workers, caregivers. She schedules those folks to be in the right place at the right time to give that support. And as well as on, you know, she has to also provide that care when there's not a regular staff available. So let's hear the conversation I had with Cheryl Nesbitt. Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You work for Community Living Alliance, mm-hmm. and you are a scheduler for them?
Yes. Correct.
And what do you do?
I help put together the schedules for the clients, and then I also go out and provide direct care when needed.
Okay. So what is direct care? What do you mean by that?
Prepare dinners, help with feeding, mm-hmm. Help clients get into bed, mm-hmm. get cleaned up. I do some range of motion and some different therapy with some of them.
Okay. So these are people who have disabilities of one type or another?
They have, yeah, needs for their care.
Are you working with people who might have mobility needs?
Most of them that I work with, yes, just mm-hmm. have mobility. Mm-hmm. They can self-direct, which means they can tell me what they need
right.
or where I can find what they need.
What do you find most challenging that a caregiver will run into?
I think it's caregiver fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
You give so much to everybody else that you forget about yourself.
Yeah. And we've all heard that phrase that how can you take care of others if you aren't taking care of yourself.
Yeah. But you really just put that to the back because there's other stuff that needs to be done.
I know that right now the whole nation in particular is just running into a shortage of workers. And we know here in Dane County that there is a definite workforce shortage. Does that impact CLA for you?
I definitely think it does.
Yeah. In what?
Because we're short in all of our departments.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really putting the whole caregiver fatigue out there.
Right. How do you think that impacts the people we serve, the clients?
Well, I would like to believe that it doesn't impact them, that we cover mm-hmm. ourselves so they don't know. Mm-hmm. But they do.
Yeah.
I mean, they can tell.
Yeah.
And they're very understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And they know what's going on around them, too.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. I know that the relationships we build will keep someone coming back to work. But is there anything else you feel that, a direct support professional really needs to help them be able to stay working in this field?
Besides just the basics of a livable wage and benefits, and I think they really need to feel like they're appreciated.
Yeah.
By not only by obviously the people who they care for, mm-hmm. but by the company that employs them.
Yeah. Do you feel that Community Living Alliance does do that?
I feel like they go above and beyond mm-hmm. what I've seen from other companies.
Okay. So
they really, really try to make everyone feel like they're appreciated.
You're welcome. Appreciate your time. Thank you, Cheryl.
Wow. I think brought us into a good segue to talk just for a couple of seconds here about what we do at Community Living Alliance for some of our caregivers. Every year in the month of October, we have typically had recognition for several of our caregivers that are nominated by the clients they work for. And we have several Bob Deist Caring for the Caregiver of the Year awards that go out. The last couple of years, due to COVID, we've not been able to get together. When we first started doing these awards, we had the workers, the clients, and the caregivers come in, and the clients would tell us what the caregivers, as they would tell our staff, what the caregivers had done for them and how special that was. And then they would be there to take pictures and get their caregiver, give their caregivers their awards. And then we would usually have a lunch. But COVID put kind of a stop to that. So the last couple of years, our staff have just been able to go out and get pictures with the clients and their caregivers. And that's also been special. I think some of that has been and may still be, up in our building as far as what, what people see when they come mm-hmm. into our building.
Yeah.
Then the other thing is November is National Family Caregiver of the Month, Caregiver of the Year month or whatever. And that is time for us to thank the family members of the people who provide cares. We do have a number of family members who work for their family mm-hmm. and at CLA, which I think is really a neat thing because that often is much easier for someone if they're familiar with their caregiver.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people who do that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, one of the things I was going to say before I forgot, is that we try at Community Living Connect. Well, let's just say this. Can be somewhat of a hardship. Of course, we love our family. We love the person, the child, the uncle, the mom. We love them and they have a disability and we take care of them. But what happens often, more often than not, is that, the care itself is time consuming. The care itself is something that, can provide, can cause, I've heard a term called secondary trauma, right? So whenever someone else is going through something intense, the caregiver, is not able to, is absorbing that energy, and can they themselves, you know, suffer from physical pain or emotional pain. And yes. And so CLA recognizes the time, you know, that it takes to give care, and we're always working towards trying to help that family member receive some type of pay for that. It doesn't happen for everyone.
Yes.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, so it, I mean, we do, we are able to hire some family to work for other family members. Unfortunately, for example, we aren't at this point able to hire parents of children under age 18, although we serve that population. That's not our regulations, but it is something we're not able to do. Once a child turns 18, we can hire a parent, but we still want to be there as a support,
right,
in any way we can to the parents and the family members. We are also sometimes able to hire siblings, mm-hmm, once they turn a certain age to work for family. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that has been, I think, one of the struggles that we have is that they're, and you know, we can't hire spouses officially, mm-hmm, to work, but again, want to come alongside them and help them find the resources,
right,
they
right
need, both for respite and just to feel like they're being heard and getting something that works for them.
Yeah, and I don't want to exaggerate any of that. I know that there are rules, regulations, and limitations, but
yeah,
you know, again, you know, CLA is really working hard to, again, bring, you know, the best quality of life that we can. And of course, we're highlighting today that that caregiver.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, so we talked about the fundraiser, and you know, there's going to be a lot of things to offer the public there, the workers that'll be there in the public. But there is a band. You've kind of heard some snippets of their music in this show. Unity, the band, is going to be there. And we just want to say, you know, thank you to them. So for being our performance, and the some fun at that event. So we've got a couple of songs from them that we'd like to play. The first one being called Say What You Want. So enjoy this, a couple of this, and get a little taste of the music that we'll be playing at the event.
Say what you want, say what you want, say what you want. I'm begging you, please, begging you, please, begging you, please. Now I tell you, babe, that I know I need your love. We made it through the hard times and problems that we've had. On your mind, I'll always be right here next to you. So forget your problems and follow me to a party rendezvous. And I need your love, ooh yeah,
ooh yeah.
Let me be your love. Say what you want,
Still burning like a moonlit fire, and all your dreams will ever come to be. Rainbow colors fill your mind with happiness that you will find when doubt and worries vanish above. The beauty of the life, live well. What destination time will tell, but only if you're true to what you love. To be, demand your face reality. Seems the whole world has a better plan. It's hard to fight the words they say, but only you can find your way. Travel down the road that you began. So keep on walking, tell my friends, you've only one life till it ends. To take the chances they all deny. When others think you've got it wrong, keep faith alive and vision strong, 'cause only you can see the reason why. In their design, it's dream of red embroidered in a colored tapestry, a world of wonder and threats combined. So just continue making plans, don't stop when no one understands. It only seems you walk alone. Believe that destiny will bring the lyrics to the song you'll sing, a melody that you can call your own.
All right, that was Unity the Band. And what do you think, Kate? That was a lot of fun, right?
come to our fundraiser on the 16th of June are going to really enjoy them. I've never heard them before, and it's just fun to listen to them on the radio here.
Yeah, they're just fun, and I think that's why we have asked them to, be a part of that event. Just kind of more, of course there's going to be the music. That's the big draw, of course, of the caregivers and that interaction with them. There's other fun stuff that's going to be there, like a 50-50 raffle and silent auction. And just to say this, too, with Unity, they won the Wisconsin Artists of the Year in 2021.
Cool.
Yeah. So
that is awesome.
Their music is quality.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a free time later in the evening that we're going to have a more formal program, as I understand it, earlier. And then later in the evening, people can just come from the bar or wherever they want to come.
Yeah.
And just enjoy the music. Yeah. And and have drinks and dance, yeah, whatever, with us.
And so if you are interested in participating in some real good fun, some live music from Unity, the band, that has to be something that you're interested in, right? You can go to our website at clanet.org. And, check us out there. You can find that information there. And of course, as you mentioned, there's like an after party that starts at 8. So that's cool. Let's see. So we've got one more interview from our executive director, Todd Costello, and he's one of the sweetest guys I've ever met.
True.
Yeah. And he's, again, the executive director. He has a genuine interest and care for the workers that help CLA be who we are and provide that wonderful care. Let's hear what he has to say today.
Thank you for joining me today, Todd.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so in addition to being the executive director of Community Living Alliance, you are also the president of Wisconsin Personal Services Association, a current board member and past president of the Wisconsin Long-Term Care Workforce Alliance, and also a former co-chair of the Governor's Task Force on Caregiving. Correct?
Yes.
All right. Well, can you tell us why you're involved in so many organizations and how do those organizations intersect with the work you do at CLA?
Well, it's a great opportunity to share with others. I really feel as a society that we've missed an opportunity to really highlight the value of this work and the importance of caregiving and just the impact that this work, has on people's lives. And so it's an important career. It's an important service, and I think that we have undervalued it. We have spent a lot of time and effort to educate legislators, policy makers, to really bring awareness and the need for workers. We were experiencing just difficulty with recruiting and retaining quality workers really for, the last 5-10 years. So mm-hmm. This is not a new concept.
What are the barriers for not only family members who provide care, but the caregiver themselves?
Honestly, I think it's the relationship. I hear so often, whenever I have the privilege to talk with many of our caregivers or our families and recipients of care, what I hear from caregivers is, how much they enjoy working with their clients. And, these workers are like family members. We have some folks that are, really isolated, and sometimes it's that caregiver is the only person that they get to see in a day. And so the relationship is just so powerful. And really very meaningful. It's an honorable profession. I think as an organization, we really strive to find ways to value all of our workers. You know, it's our most precious asset is our workforce. You know, it allows us to do what we do each day, and so we continue to look for ways to have a safe and respectful, inclusive work environment where we celebrate diversity and, you know, look for ways to welcome all people, looking for ways to really celebrate this workforce.
Well, that's wonderful. And, you know, Todd, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today. Appreciate you.
Great, Stephanie. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, that was Todd. He was such a wonderful guy, yeah?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
So, lots of good things to say.
Yeah. He is involved with so many different organizations and fighting so hard behind the scenes to, of course, make sure that people with disabilities have, you know, a quality of life that is as ours should be, right? And
correct.
Yeah. As well as, of course, the workers. So.
Yes. Definitely fighting for their rights as well.
Mm-hmm.
To be paid well and get the things that they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, just a few more minutes left. I just want to let all of you know one more time that you can find out more about Community Living Alliance at our
website.
At our website. I mean, I know that word. CLANet.org. So our time is coming to a close, Kate.
Well, we just thank you all for coming into our family room and letting us share with you for the last hour. And again, like Stephanie said, feel free to check us out on our website.
Yeah. And you know what? We're going to take these last couple of minutes and we're going to continue to share one of our favorite bands in Madison. And they're traveling too. They're doing quite well. So one last song from Unity the Band. You all have a good evening.
Bye.
Like a dancing, walk the beaches, kick your shoes. How do you feel it? I got the feeling in my toes, just can't help it. Show me your love, keep me drumming like an ocean thrill. From your head to your toes, keep it flowing. Live for today, tell me a girl that you feel alright. Turn me close with the rhythm that you know it. Reggae music in the air all through the night. Can you feel it? You're the one I love. Ooh yeah, ooh yeah. Can you feel it? You're the one I love. Ooh yeah, ooh yeah. Put on swimsuits, a time for dancing. On the beaches of the Fiji Islands, you
you've been listening to The Access Hour. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on The Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. Remember, though, that this show relies on your ideas. An application to produce a program can be found on the internet at wortfm.org. Look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Music, talk, comedy, drama, or whatever can be conveyed over the radio, the Access Hour is anything you want it to be.
Musicians for Wart is back. Join WORT for an evening of great music at the North Street Cabaret on Saturday, May 7th, featuring an evening of groovy, luscious cabaret, jazz, folk, and everything in between. The evening starts at 7 p.m. featuring Elm Duo, Gaines and Wagner, and the Combo Noir. $10 in advance or $12 at the door to support WORT Community Radio. Tickets and more information are available at NorthStreetCabaret.com.
Here it comes, a lady killer, eyes that sparkle, shoes that shine.
This is WORT Back Porch Broadcasting, Madison.
Hi, my name is Polly Scattergood, dialing in to tell you that you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. Listener-sponsored community radio, sending my love to you from London.
Take this silver lining.
The Friends of Madison Arts Commission celebrates creativity and honors the dedication and perseverance that brought silver linings to our city during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Silver Lining Awards take place Thursday, May 12 at Garver Feed Mill from 7 to 10 p.m. The event will honor all 74 nominees, including WORT, in the categories of arts, hospitality, and community. 20 Silver Lining Awards will be presented. Doors and cocktail hours start at 7 p.m., featuring performances by Yid Vicious and Cycropia Aerial Dance, with the awards program.